discovered it. It is very, very weird and exciting stuff. I mean, in my career as an astrophysicist, I never imagined I would be associated with or even would witness such an exciting new development in our understanding of the universe.
Certainly, it is taking over control of the universe, and we don't understand why. It's probably the most important cosmological fact since the discovery of the universe was expanding.
The universe has been in existence for, let's say, 13 to 15 billion years. But you and I, and this is no exaggeration, we're living at the precise moment in its history for contemplating among the untold trillions of stars and galaxies strange, exciting, unexpected, weird stuff that can suddenly shift the whole cosmic machine into another higher gear. Instead of just coasting along after the Big Bang like dying ripples in the vast pond of space and time, our universe appears to be speeding up. We believe this because of some astronomical detective work involving the Hubble Space Telescope, patient and systematic image analysis, and a cosmic dollop of sheer good luck, all of which I'll be exploring in this program. The implications of the new discoveries are enormous. From now on, the physics books may have to be rewritten to include a completely novel major character, and science will have to look again at where the cosmos is heading and what really is the nature of that ubiquitous material we call space. At the center of this extraordinary story lies a new physical force or energy, unlike anything you've ever heard of outside science fiction, perhaps, acting as the mega controller of our destiny.
What we're talking about here is springy space. Although you might think of space as just empty, in fact it's actually springy, almost like a rubber ball, and it can actually push things apart.
It has profound implications for cosmology, it has profound implications for our fundamental laws of physics, and it may even affect our understanding of the future of the universe. There may not be new stars and galaxies forming in the universe, that's a logical possibility, and they were kind of the end of this brief epic of evolution of stars, galaxies, and life.
So, it's the story of a new form of energy, which we'll call for the moment, springy space. Space that instead of drawing matter together under the force of gravity, seems to be pushing things apart, kicking them into renewed action. It's certainly mysterious, but it's also a bit of a relief for cosmologists who study the universe on the grand scale and try to work out its evolution, past, present, and future. It turns out that springy space can help resolve an embarrassing paradox about the age of the universe that emerged just a few years ago. The paradox of descendants being older than their ancestors.
Astronomers have calculated what's claimed to be the most accurate measurement so far of the age of the universe. Data gathered from the Hubble Space Telescope has indicated that it's younger than previously thought.
It's the big mystery in science, but estimates have ranged from about 11 billion years upwards, and that's embarrassing because we know that the oldest stars are older than 11 billion years, so the universe must be older than that.
One of my colleagues put it, you can't be older than your grandmother, and so one is left with a paradox. But with that paradox is an opportunity for discovery.
When observations from the Hubble Space Telescope suggested that some stars seem to be older than the universe itself, it caused an almighty flap among cosmologists. But now, that same instrument is coming to their rescue, with further pictures that could resolve the riddle. They show that, no, the cosmos isn't slowing down, but suddenly accelerating under some novel force. Cosmologist and writer Marcus Chown.
This is the most amazing surprise, because we thought that the only force operating in the universe was gravity. The gravity which tends to pull galaxies together, and that is actually breaking the expansion of the universe. Remember, the universe detonated in the Big Bang. Well, no one quite knows why it detonated, and the galaxies flew apart like pieces of shrapnel. And since then, they've been moving apart, we thought, more and more slowly as gravity slowed this expansion.
So still expanding, but more slowly, but losing momentum, as it were.
That would be the obvious assumption, and what we've actually discovered is that that isn't what's happening. At some point, this slowing down has been reversed, and the universe is currently expanding faster than it was before. Remember that the universe was born perhaps 12, 13 billion years ago, so somehow another force has actually taken control of the universe in the last few billion years.
You said that gravity is, as it were, the retarding force, so are we to think of this other force as a sort of anti-gravity, the obverse of gravity?
Precisely that, it's anti-gravity. The only possibility is that it's empty space. There isn't anything else in the universe. There is only matter and there's empty space. So empty space somehow has some sort of repulsive force. It has some sort of anti-gravity, which is opposing gravity.
I coined the phrase dark energy because this stuff that's making the universe accelerate is definitely much more like energy than it is matter, and it doesn't give off any light for us to see.
Mike Turner, a theoretician at the University of Chicago, who prefers the term dark energy to springy space or anti-gravity. Actually, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's still, to all intents and purposes, incomprehensible.
Even those of us who spend our days and nights worrying about this dark energy have a hard time understanding it, and we still don't know very much about it. It is right now the dominant player in the universe. Of course, I guess its critical feature is that its gravitational effect is repulsive rather than being attractive. It doesn't clump up in galaxies. It doesn't clump up in clusters of galaxies. It is all pervasive.
If dark energy is everywhere and able to act as an accelerator for the whole universe, it not only helps solve the paradox of its age, it also sheds light, dark as it is, on another riddle, that of the missing mass. There isn't as much matter in the universe as calculations suggest there should be. John Peacock of the Royal Observatory in Edinburgh leads a project to determine accurately the proportions of matter in the universe compared to the space in between. It's called the 2-degree field survey.
The 2-degree field survey is an attempt to make a three-dimensional picture of 250,000 galaxies in the region of the universe we live in. And when I say the local region, it's a region that's large enough to be a fair sample of the universe as a whole. And what we're able to see is that galaxies live in chains or filaments up to 100 million light years long, so colossal things, the biggest structures we know of in the universe. And those patterns, as is commonly believed, formed just by gravity acting on regions of the universe that were slightly more dense than the average. So gravity attracts material to itself. So if you take a region of space that once upon a time, say, had only 1% more material than an average region, over time, gravity will act to suck in more material, and you end up with regions of the hundreds or thousands of times the mean density. And these are the kinds of patterns we're seeing now. So really, from looking at the fine details of those patterns, you can tell how much gravity, that is, how much matter has been acting to create them.
We know that the ordinary matter, the visible matter, the stuff that makes up stars and planets and galaxies, accounts for something like 3% of the critical mass of the universe. That's all. We need to find another 97%. Now, it turns out another 30%, there is 10 times more invisible matter, we infer, than visible matter. You may have heard of this. It's called dark matter. Okay, we're still short. Two-thirds of the mass of the universe is still missing. And that's been the problem recently in cosmology.
For the physicist, matter and energy are interchangeable. Matter can be created from sheer energy. Energy can come from solid matter. E equals mc squared is the relevant equation. That being so, dark energy could complete the astronomical arithmetic and account for those missing two-thirds of matter of the universe, the stuff that no telescope has ever seen. But if you can't see it, how do we know it's there? Well, by inference and implication, and by looking at pictures of exploding stars that have reached the end of their lifetimes, supernovae. It all began 4 years ago when Adam Rice from the Hubble Space Telescope Institute made observations of these brilliant space beacons.
These are excellent tools for the study of the universe because they're so bright. They're about as bright as 10 billion suns for a short time. And so we can see them from very far away. And we have developed techniques to measure two things about them, how far away they are and what their redshift is. And the redshift is a stretching of the wavelengths of light to the red as a result of the universe expanding and stretching space. And so by measuring these things, we can tell how fast the universe is expanding. And of course, the universe has provided us an excellent time machine in the fact that more distant supernovae are so far away, it takes the light a long time to reach us. So when the light does reach us, it communicates to us what the universe was doing at ever more earlier parts of its history. And so we can compare how fast the universe is expanding today to how fast it was expanding 5, 7, 10, 12 billion years ago. And in this way, we can map out how the expansion is changing. And we used relatively distant supernovae, ones that were about 5 billion light years away, which were fainter than we expected, which implied they were further away and that the universe was accelerating today.
These things are something like 5 or 6 billion light years away, and they should have been only 4 or 5 billion light years away for these particular objects. I thought we had made an error either in the observations or more likely in the analysis, so we checked and rechecked our calculations, and we couldn't find an error.
Alex Filipenko of the University of California, who independently came to the same conclusion as Adam Rice, that our universe is not slowing down, but speeding up.
The universe in its expansion couldn't simply have been coasting, and it couldn't definitely have been slowing down as it's been expanding, because those objects wouldn't have gotten that far away. So the universe has to be speeding up in its expansion. It's accelerating. And that pushed the objects very far away to the very extreme distances at which we are seeing them.
It was such a startling conclusion. There were alternatives, and we needed to test those alternatives. And there was one clean way to perform a test, which is to find a really distant supernova, one that had exploded when the universe was maybe about a quarter of its present age. And there's, at this point, probably only one telescope that could find such a supernova, the Hubble Space Telescope, because it has such excellent resolution. And an astronomer at Space Telescope Institute, Ron Gilliland, had observed a portion of the sky known as the Hubble Deep Field, which is, it's kind of a random location in the sky. There's nothing special about it. In fact, it was chosen because it wasn't a special place. It was just sort of an average place. And the Hubble Space Telescope stared at that spot for about 2 weeks and was able to observe very distant galaxies. And Ron Gilliland went back and observed that same piece of the sky 2 years later, and he digitally subtracted one image from another, and he found a little point of light left over and thought that was a supernova. So I went back about 6 months ago, and I started digging through the archive of all the images the Hubble Space Telescope has collected, and it turned out that the Hubble Space Telescope had observed that place on many more occasions after the supernova exploded. And I was able to piece together a series of images which provided the history of this supernova and the information that we needed to figure out how far away it is. And it turns out it was by far the most distant supernova we've ever seen. It's really a record smasher. It's about 12 billion light years away. And this supernova was brighter than we expected, which implied the universe was doing the opposite, that it was decelerating at that time, back when it was very young.
So, Adam, the picture I'm getting is that the universe began to slow down after the Big Bang because this very distant and very old supernova was brighter than you'd expect. But before that, you'd found another supernova, which must have gone on quite recently, being dimmer than expected. So this one was more distant than you'd think, suggesting things are speeding up.
Sure.
Okay, now you're obviously a patient and careful astronomer, but you've also, haven't you, been a bit fortunate to find this second one?
It's, you know, it's extremely lucky. I mean, it's an extremely unlikely event. We know that supernovas do blow up all the time in the universe, but to happen to be looking at the moment when one does blow up, and then to happen to return to that point in the sky, not knowing that one was there, and keep reobserving it over and over, which is just what we needed for this experiment, is extremely lucky. It's very difficult for me to put odds on it, but this seems sort of like a one in a million occurrence to me.
That lucky break has galvanized cosmologists into thinking that here indeed is evidence of dark energy hammering on the universe's accelerator pedal, speeding up the expansion process. Alex Filipenko again on the great interactive dance between repulsive dark energy and retarding gravity.
The universe started out expanding, and when all the matter was close together, it tended to exert a rather strong gravitational deceleration, a slowing down of the universe. But as the universe expanded and thinned out, the galaxies became so far apart from each other that their gravitational pull towards one another diminished. Meanwhile, this repulsive dark energy, which is a property of space itself, in a sense grew with time, because the more space there is, the more of this dark energy there is, and the greater is the tendency for distant objects to repel one another. So the universe switched into an accelerating state.
So, the more voluminous space becomes, the stronger the force exerted by dark energy. The greater the vacuum, the emptiness, the greater its energy. So how can so much nothingness be so active? Marcus Chown again.
The vacuum is completely bursting with energy. It's bursting with energy because of what's called quantum theory. Quantum theory is a theory which explains atoms and the microscopic world. It explains why the sun shines. It explains why the floor under our feet is solid. It's a hugely successful theory. And it predicts that the vacuum is actually full of particles popping into existence and vanishing very, very quickly. But this does leave a residual energy density in the vacuum. In fact, the prediction is that the energy density in the vacuum is enormous, absolutely fantastically huge, greater than even in an atomic nucleus. You may think, well, why don't we notice it? The reason we don't notice it is because it's the same everywhere. You don't notice something that's the same everywhere.
Those particles, do we know what kinds of particles they are? They're just totally, it's just totally novel.
The particles that are being created are exactly the same as the particles which we're made of, and all other particles that can be made in the universe. The difference between them and the particles that we're made of is that they have a fleeting existence. They're only allowed to exist for a short time.
Millionths of a second, billionths of a second, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's rather like you'd think there was a thing called the conservation of energy, which means you can't make or destroy energy. How come these things are being created from nothing? Well, it's rather like borrowing your dad's car overnight and getting it back in the morning before he notices it's gone. That's exactly what it's about. You actually create the particles and you destroy them, get them back, before the laws of physics actually notice that you've created them.
The Hubble observations suggesting the existence of dark energy are very recent, but the idea of a repulsive force pervading the whole of space isn't new. It goes back to Einstein, who incidentally thought he'd got it all wrong and called it his biggest blunder. The father of relativity called this strange force the cosmological constant. Like others after him, says Mike Turner, he needed to invoke it to balance his equations.
Historically, every time cosmologists have been in trouble, they've invoked the cosmological constant. First, Einstein started this by saying, let me put a term in my equations to create a static universe. Because when he first applied his equations to the universe, he found that the universe wanted to contract. And at that time, it was thought the universe was static. And he put in a fudge factor, the cosmological constant. Then Hoyle, when we had an age problem in the 50s, and it's not worked out either previous time, and so that's why we held our noses. But with this measurement indicating that the universe was speeding up, it seemed to vindicate this idea that there might be something like a cosmological constant that was accounting for two-thirds of the stuff in the universe, revealing itself through this smoking gun signature of accelerated expansion.
There was an interesting property of this energy. Its repulsive effect grows with the amount of space. So if you double the amount of space between two objects, you double the repulsive effect. If you triple it, you triple the repulsive effect. So on our scale, the space between two people on the Earth, there isn't really much vacuum. There isn't much repulsive force. But when you get to very, very large cosmological scales, there's a lot of space pushing between objects. And that's when it actually becomes important.
So the idea is that dark energy, this repulsive force, will kick in when there's enough space for it to exert its influence on the whole of the cosmos.
Exactly. So although we've measured this effect and we've seen it on a very, very large scale in the universe, it doesn't really have a measurable effect even within our solar system, the sun and planets. It only kicks in, as you say, on a very, very large scale.
Let's go back then to that paradox we looked at earlier, the fact that some stars seem to be older than the universe itself. How does dark energy, aka springy space, aka the cosmological constant, get the theorists off that particularly painful hook?
It's certainly the simplest test of any cosmological theory, and that is that the time back to the Big Bang ought to exceed the age of the oldest things in the universe, from astronomers to stars. And if you took the best time back to the Big Bang, you might have gotten a number like 10 billion years, and if you took the best ages for the oldest stars, you might have gotten a number close to 20 billion years. So cosmology was in crisis.
An accelerating universe does solve the age problem. It means that the universe must have been expanding more slowly in the past. If it was expanding more slowly in the past, then it obviously took longer to get to its present size. So immediately, you can get an older universe. So you suddenly have all of your stars younger than the universe, which is, of course, makes everyone very happy. But why should the dark energy be taking over control of the universe today when we're here? I mean, there's absolutely no reason at all. And this is a major bombshell dropped into the world of physics.
The why now problem. Why should the brake give way to the accelerator at this particular point in the evolution of the universe? Paul Steinberg of Princeton University.
When we go back in time, we know that for most of the last 14 or 15 billion years of the universe has been decelerating. If it weren't decelerating, it would have been expanding too rapidly to form stars and galaxies and the like. This acceleration, whatever it is, must have turned on quite recently. So how do you arrange for a flow of energy to be sort of irrelevant in the, for most of the history and then suddenly turn on at this late stage of the universe? That is a very key problem that's a challenge to cosmology.
Somebody described it as a sort of midlife crisis, you know, like the 45-year-old buying a Harley-Davidson and rushing around the block.
Something like that, yes. Here, if it's a vacuum energy, for example, it seems like a totally bizarre coincidence. Because whatever the vacuum energy is, we said it's the same for all time. So its value was set back when the universe was, you know, emerging from the Big Bang, say. And yet, it was chosen with just the right value that 15 billion years later, just as human beings were coming to evolve, it's come to take over the universe and cause the universe to accelerate.
So dark energy seems mysteriously to link in with the evolution of humankind. It is indeed an odd coincidence, if coincidence it be. If it really is now up and running, it may also have a say in our future destiny.
If the dark energy is truly this inert, unchanging form of energy, then the fate of the universe is pretty much set. What will happen over time is that the universe will be expanding faster and faster. It will roughly double in size every 15 billion years or so. So it's nothing that you have to worry about in terms of, you know, our generation or the next generation or maybe even for humankind. But looking on the grand scale, the universe on every 15 billion years or so will now begin to double in size. That's a logical possibility. And then we're kind of the end of this brief epoch of evolution of stars, galaxies, and life.
In a mere 150 billion years, which on the cosmic scale is quite short, galaxies in the universe will be moving away from us so fast that instead of being able to see the 100 billion galaxies that we can see today, we'll only see about 200 of our nearest neighbors.
But there's not enough normal and dark matter in the universe, we believe, to ever halt that expansion and cause a recollapse or a big crunch or a gnab-gib, which is the backwards of the Big Bang, I like to call it. So in other words, even if this dark energy turns off, the universe will continue to expanding, but it will do so ever more slowly.
Dark energy is the theoretician's dream. Its properties and behavior are hard to fathom, but it solves major puzzles about the age, composition, and fate of the universe. It also tidies up many astrophysical calculations. But remember, its presence can only be inferred if the universe is indeed accelerating. The Hubble Space Telescope supernovae observations really need to be beefed up, says Mike Turner, using new dedicated telescopes such as the proposed Supernova Acceleration Probe, SNAP.
The discovery of the acceleration of the universe involved using exploding stars or supernovae as cosmic milestones. And so far, a couple hundred of those supernovae have been used to chart out the past history of the expansion of the universe. And if we really want to understand what's going on, probably instead of a couple hundred, we need maybe 10 or 20,000. And we need to study them in very precise detail. And so the idea would be to put up a space telescope of about 2 meters in size that, unlike the Hubble telescope, which concentrates on a small part of the sky at once, this telescope would look at a relatively large part of the sky so that it could discover a lot of these exploding stars and chart out the past expansion history of the universe to try to see exactly how the universe took its foot off the brake and put it on the accelerator, to see if we can see any signs that this acceleration is diminishing, and try to understand precisely what this dark energy is.
What it is, and indeed if it is. Marcus Chown is still skeptical as to whether it exists at all.
My gut feeling is that the dark energy will go away, because the history of cosmology is a history of us being completely wrong. I mean, cosmology is the hardest of sciences. We sit on this tiny planet in the middle of this vast universe. We can't go anywhere and do any experiments. All we can do is pick up the light that happens to fall on us and deduce some things about the universe. Now, in order to deduce things about the universe, we have to make some very basic assumptions. We have to assume that the laws of physics are the same elsewhere, in the most distant galaxies they are here. We make some further assumptions. We say that the universe is what's called homogeneous. It's uniform in density everywhere. We have to make these assumptions to make progress. And the cosmological information that we can actually measure is very limited. And, you know, we've been wrong in the past. Hubble, who discovered that the universe was expanding, overestimated the expansion rate by 10 times. And we've constantly been discovering things in cosmology which have turned out in the fullness of time to be incorrect.
When is a discovery not a discovery then? Well, when it's supported by such a deluge of observational evidence that no one can resist it. Paul Steinberg is optimistic. He believes not only that this unimaginably powerful energy source, this newcomer on the stage of cosmology and physics, will be captured by high-tech observations. He also feels that we'll get to understand dark energy in all its bizarre complexity. Not just darkness visible, but darkness comprehensible.
One of the exciting things about cosmology today is we're not betting on just one technology anymore. We happen to be living in an era nowadays where there are many different attacks on a problem, and what we really look for is to use a combination punch to attack an issue such as this. When one sees an agreement of using different techniques, one has a much more confidence in the answer. To try to explain this form of energy will require new mathematics and physics.